As we finish off Maseches Sota here, I just want to make note of the 3 points related to these last two dapim in Maseches Sota, and some interesting and surprising, perhaps, ideas that emerge from them. So first, just a quick comment on the idea of the Bittul HaMa'urim. The Gemara says that among all the many things that were eliminated at various stages, so included were the Ma'urim. The Ma'urim were the people who every day would quote the Pasuk in Tehillim, Ura Lamasishan Hashem, that Kilu, they're saying that a Kadosh Baruch Hu should get up from sleeping. And of course, that's not the case. That, as the Gemara says, V'chiyesh Sheinu Lefnei Malkom. So could it be that God is sleeping? We know that we say, Hinei Lo Yonam V'lo Yishan Sharmi Yisrael. And rather, the idea is that when the Jews are having a hard time, so then they say this expression, Kilu, telling Kadosh Baruch Hu to help them. So there is a drasha about this in the Sefer Evin Pina of Rabbi Yoel Kalatzkin, which was, I think, just released in a fancier edition with footnotes. And in Siman Zayin, he has a drasha all about this Gemara, where he questions how could it be that they didn't understand until then that that was the pshat. I mean, clearly, it didn't mean that Kadosh Baruch Hu is actually sleeping. Clearly, it's a mashal. And that they felt that God's presence was hidden from them, Hester Panim. And what happened all of a sudden that it was necessary to change this because it was somehow being misunderstood? So he discusses there about how the issue is that they were speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a strong way, that they were coming as if they had a taina and not so much as a tefillah. And that perhaps the issue is that this connects to what the Gemara there is also talking about, and that was deficiencies in the bringing of Maisris. And Chazal have an idea, as a Medrash Rabbah and Parshas Kisisa, that we say, the Pasuk says, L'cha Hashem Estaka V'lanu Boshas Apanim, that even when we are doing staka, so we are embarrassed, we don't take pride in our actions, and we don't act in a haughty way. The only time that we have a little bit of an ability to speak in a stronger tone is when we're bringing maestros. Maestros are considered to be even more powerful than staka. It's about that that the Gemara says that we can test HaKadosh Baruch Hu by bringing the maestros and seeing if that indeed leads to the ashiras that is promised in association with them. So here, as he notes, this is because this also connects to the support of Torah and the support of the Levim and the Kohanim, who are there to teach Torah to the nation. So when Maestros are in full force, so then there's more of an ability to speak in a stronger fashion. But if the Maestros were lacking, as the Gemara indicated, that's why they also got rid of the Vidoy Meiser, so then there was no permission to speak in a stronger way, and therefore they got rid also of these Ma'arim. And he notes that this is also consistent with what the Rambam writes in his Perush HaMishnayos, and also in Hilchos Meiser Sheni, where he writes, Shetziva Shalola Marapasuk Ura Lamasishan, Lefi shahayu omrim zek iluhim medabrim v'tzolkim la'Hashem yisbarach b'zeh ha'pasuk v'zeh ma she'enu roi lomar klapei maila. So the Rambam emphasizes that it's as if they are yelling, not that they're misunderstanding what the pasuk is about. So that seems to be different than the way the Gemara explains it. So he notes that it's not different, that that's essentially the point, that this was a schus that they didn't have at that time, that they weren't able to speak that way. And he also suggests that this is connected to where the Gemara also says over here that they got rid of the nokvim, they got rid of these actions that were aggressively taken against the animals that were going to be shechted, that were there in order to keep them still. But they also had aspects that the Gemara doesn't identify here, but that it seems to us when we read it, that it has aspects of Tzar Bali Chaim, even though the Gemara tells us that there were other reasons that were identified in why these activities were stopped. And he explains that there is a notion that even when there is a heter to use an animal in a painful way, But there's also potential onesh that comes from that because of the achzarius that is displayed. So therefore, if people are particularly vulnerable because of averos or because of lack of zchuyus that they may have at that time, so then there has to be an even greater sensitivity to tzar bali chayim, to recognizing just how much that exposes one to onshin, and that even if they quoted other concerns in terms of telling the people they should stop doing this, so that was a way of also trying to get the point across, but the motivation perhaps also included this fact that because of the spiritual deficiencies of the people at that time, so they were even more vulnerable to what onshin should come because of the achzarius that was contained in these actions that imposed pain on the animals. And therefore, perhaps that was also a part of what was going on here, that they limited those actions in order to prevent even what may have otherwise been permissible or justified tzar bali chayim. So that's one interesting point from these Gemaras. There's also a Gemara here that seems to be somewhat surprising, seems to be somewhat hard to understand. The Gemara here on Mem Tesmet Aleph tells us Rav Acha bar Yaakov itapel bei b'Rav Yaakov bar Brate, that Rav Acha bar Yaakov took care of Rav Yaakov, who was his grandson, the son of his daughter. Ki gadal amrele, and then when he grew up, so the grandfather asked him, Ashken Maya, please could you give me some water to drink? And it's got a surprising response, the grandson. He says, Amrlo lav brichano. He says, I'm not your son. V'hainu da amri nashe, rabbi rabbi bar bratechano. That you can raise your grandchild and still he's going to say to you, I'm the son of your daughter, I'm not the son of you. So this idea that he didn't seem to want to help because he wasn't actually his son. And here Rashi says, Rabbi Rabbi, Gadel Gadelusi, Biafal Pikain, Eni Benach. So, and the next Rashi says, V'inolai Lechapicha Kibain, I don't have to respect you like a son. So that's certainly a surprising attitude, certainly seems disrespectful, and especially because, in addition to the fact that he's his elder, but both as a grandfather, he should be the recipient of some degree of kavod, and also as one who raised him, one would imagine that there would be a chiyuv kavod towards a parent who, towards a person who raises a child as, let's say, an adoptive parent, even if they're not the biological parent. And that certainly seems that intuitively that should be the case, that one would think that since Mefarshim all points to Hakara Satov as one of the major themes in Kibbud Av V'Em. So certainly if somebody raises a child, even if they're not the biological parents, if they're the adoptive parents, so one would imagine that there may be either the actual din of Kibbud Av V'Em that should apply to them, or if not that, then at least the aspect of Hakaras HaTov that is the active ingredient here should also apply to the adoptive parents. And the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva in Aruch Chaim in Siman Kuf Samach Dalet, where he notes that that doesn't seem to be the implication of this Gemara. It sounds like this Gemara with the Rashi is telling us that an adoptive child doesn't seem to have an obligation of kibbutz towards a parent. So that seems to be very difficult both intuitively and logically, and also it's against other sources. So for example, there's a comment in the Shmos Rabbah that many poskim point to, where when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe that he should go to Paro, so Moshe said that I can't go without getting permission from Yisro, that here Yisro opened up his house to me and treated me like a son, and somebody who does that, so there's a great chiyuv towards such a person, and the language is that he's a chayiv b'chvodo yosem avim, was chayiv in kavod to such a person. So that would certainly seem to contradict this idea, and also to reinforce probably the more intuitive notion that there is an obligation of kavod towards somebody who has opened up his house to you, even if he's not a biological parent. And there are many other makoros that certainly seem like that as well. The Ramah is the tshuva in Siman Kuf Yud Ches, where he notes that a grandchild, the son of someone's daughter, who was also raised by the grandfather, and the grandfather found him a Rebbe, etc. So when the grandfather passes away, that this grandchild, the son of his daughter, has a schus to say Kaddish for him, essentially like one of the Avelim, like a child. And there are a number of other indications that that would be the case. And there's a tshuva about this in a contemporary sefer, the tshuvas Mizrach Shemesh, which was written by Rav Nathaniel Ma'odeid, who's a Rav in Hong Kong. And he has a tshuva where he goes through many rayas from many poskim in different contexts that do seem to support this idea that there is a obligation of kavod to an adoptive parent, whether it's the actual chi of kibud av v'aim or it's a strong obligation coming from hakar satov. There's a little bit of room to be nistapek whether the hakar satov aspect to a parent is because they brought them into the world in the first place, or is it focused specifically on a biological parent, or is it for everything that happens afterwards in the aspect of raising them? It certainly seems like that's part of it. So that should be applied to an adoptive parent as well. So it would seem like there really is such an obligation. It's just something perhaps to clarify whether it is the actual din of kibud av v'aim or it's a very strong obligation of hakaras hatov. Maybe there would be some nafkaminas. But as far as our Gemara, and the Chassam Sofer is focusing on that, so in the Tshuvas Mizrach Shemesh, so he discusses why he doesn't think that that's necessarily such a compelling proof, and he suggests that, first of all, maybe it's not so clear from the Gemara, maybe he didn't actually raise him, maybe this Yaakov was actually raised by his parents, and just the grandfather had a little bit of a role in it, but he wasn't actually like an adoptive parent, and therefore is not comparable to somebody who actually adopts the child and raises him. And that also, maybe that there was a conflict here, that maybe the parent was actually asking for service at the same time, maybe the parent was actually around, and maybe that's the point of the Gemara, that a parent, the father or mother, was asking him for something. So he was saying that I have to help them first. And this idea of asking for water is what the Gemara uses as the example of a conflict, where the Gemara Kedushin talks about if the father and the mother both ask for water at the same time. So here, this grandfather and possibly adoptive parent is asking for water, and maybe a biological parent was also around asking for water or for some service, and he's saying so it's still not on the same level, which is also still interesting because there should be presumably a chiyuv of kavod to a grandparent. And one would think, in fact, that there is a chiyuv that's even greater from the Kal Vachomer, that same Gemara in Kiddushin that talks about the conflict between a father and a mother. So the Gemara says to prioritize the father as long as the parents are still married, because the mother is also chayiv in the kavod to her husband, to the father. So therefore, the son is chayiv and kavod to both of them, so it accumulates. So one would think that to a grandparent, there would also be an even greater obligation of kavod, or certainly at least some obligation of kavod. So the Ramah quotes a Maharik that has a reference to a drasha, a medrash in a parshas Vayigash, which indicates that there's a greater obligation of kavod to a parent than there is to a grandparent. And some read that Marik to say that some read that medrash, Marik says to say that there's no chi of kavod to a grandparent, but as others point out, that the lashon of the medrash is that there's a greater chi of to the parent than to the grandparent, but not that there's no chi of to the grandparent at all. But still, one might think that actually it should be the other way around, that maybe not only should there be a chiyuv to a grandparent, but maybe it should be even more to a parent, because the parent is obligated themselves and covered to the grandparent, and therefore perhaps that should be even more. So there is a tshuva in the Minchas Elazar where he talks about this, and what emerges from the tshuva is that really, mathematically, that would be true, that there would be a chiyuv kavod of an even greater nature to a grandparent and then to a great-grandparent, and the further back you go, the obligation should really be the greatest, should keep growing more and more. And that's the chiddush of the pasuk in Parshas Vayigash, where the pasuk there says that Yaakov brought karbanos in honor of his father Yitzchak, and apparently not Avram, because there's a greater chiyuv of kavod to his father than to his grandfather. So the chiddush of that pasuk is that even though one would have thought intuitively that there's an even greater chiyuv of kavod to a grandparent, But the Chiddush tells us that we have to prioritize the nuclear family, and that because of the functioning of the family, so there has to be a hierarchy within the family. So when the parents are married, so there's a chi of kavod to the father before the mother, and the father before the grandfather, and that's all a part of when the absolute letter of the law is being invoked, what's necessary in order to have a functioning within the household. But conceptually speaking, it certainly would have made sense that there should be a chiyuv towards the grandparent and an even greater chiyuv towards the grandparent. So it seems that that's probably logically the case here as well. And so why there was this particular reaction in our Gemara, so we have to figure it out. And maybe that's what he's suggesting here, that maybe there was a conflict between a parent and the grandparent. And so the chiddush is that as much as the grandparent did for him, so there's still going to be a priority given to the parents. But it's not to say that there isn't any kind of an obligation at all to a grandparent, and especially a grandparent who was involved in raising him, one would think all the more so. This is actually also relevant to this week's parsha, because in this week's parsha, in Parshas Bamidbar, so the Torah tells us about the toldos of Aaron, and Moshe is also included in the pasuk, and Rashi quotes the idea that somebody who teaches Torah to someone is as if he gave birth to him, as if he's a parent, as if he's actually a parent. So just as we're listing Aaron's biological children, but Moshe is also credited because he taught them Torah. And that seems to be of a similar idea, that one who provides for a child and they're contributing to their spiritual growth and to their physical needs is considered to be as if they are an actual parent, and therefore many of the halachos will reflect that. And in the Sefer Parashas Vayechadash here in Bamidbar, he has many sources to that effect, and that certainly seems to be a strongly likely point. And we'll just note one more issue here, that the Gemara on Daf Mem Tes also talks about the din of Karav Malchus, and how somebody who's Karav Malchus is permitted to do things that others aren't permitted to do, including to cut his hair in a way that otherwise wouldn't be permitted. That would seem to be Chukas Akum. And the Rambam in Hilchas Avodah Zarah in Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Gimel, brings this in, that somebody who's Karav Malchus is permitted to do this, permitted to engage in these behaviors that seem to be Chukas Akum. So the Kesef Mishnah raises a question over there, that the Rambam says that otherwise, without this justification, that somebody who does this would be Chayiv Malchus. So it sounds like it's an Issa Daraisa. So if it's an Issa Daraisa, so how could Chazal ever allow it? How could they suspend what seems to be an Issa D'Oraisa? So he has two answers over there, the Kesef Mishnah. One is that maybe it rises to the level of Pikuach Nefesh, because those who are Makor of Malchus are able to advocate on behalf of the Jews in such a effective and crucial way, so maybe we have to even allow Yisurim D'Oraisa. Or the other answer he gives there is that maybe this is an example of a category that the Gemara talks about in a few places. Most well-known is the Gemara in Chagiga and Daf Yudches, which talks about this in the context of Chalamoid, that there are some dinim that are from the Torah, but Masar HaKasav L'Chachamim, that the Torah gave the authority to the Chachamim to define their parameters. So maybe that's what's going on here, that yes, there's a Chi of Malchus, because it's an Issa D'Oraisa, but there's also power given to Chachamim, so they allowed it under these circumstances. So Rabbi Chanan in his Kovid Shiurim to Bava Kamma, because this Gemara appears in Bava Kamma also. So Rabbi Chanan asks, that how does that make sense? How is that an adequate answer? That yes, Masar HaKasav L'Chachamim might be a possibility, but that's just in terms of setting the details. So they can tell you it applies in this case and not in that case. This is what's going to fall under Chukas Akum, and this is what's not, if we're going to say that this is an example of what is considered Masar HaKasav L'Chachamim. So to compare it, let's say, to Chalamoid, so what kind of activities are prohibited in Chalamoid? So Chachamim have the right to tell you what those activities are, and maybe they have the right to tell you what kind of things are considered to be Chukas Akum, but why should that make it mutter? Why should that change the severity and allow it to be suspended for these situations? So it doesn't understand what the Kesef Mishnah is getting at. So that requires us to try to understand a little bit more how this idea of Masar HaKasav L'Chachamim works. Our Beis of Engel and the Beis Otzer in Chelek Aleph in Ois Pei Zayin, so he has a Chakira about the idea that Bezdin needs to be Gadol B'Chachmu V'Minyan to undo what a previous Bezdin did. So he discusses in that context, what if what this Bezdin did was it fulfilled the role of Masra Kasav Chachamim, and it established a rule of the Torah in a certain context through that power. So then would a later Bezdin be able to come and undo it? And the basic gist of the Chakira is that do we say that, okay, it's actually like a Dimin HaTorah that was waiting to be defined, but once it's defined, so now that's what it is, the Dimin HaTorah, and no later Bezdin can change it? Or is it like a Takana of Chazal? And that once they put it into place, it may still be susceptible to being overturned by a later Bezdin. And this is something that Rav Schechter has discussed in his Shiurim on Torah Shabbat Peh and the whole nature of how it works. And he notes also an additional tzad, he could say a third way also. Maybe you could say that this is begedder an interpretation of Chazal, which would mean that a later Bezdin could have a different interpretation and they wouldn't even have to be Gadol B'Chachmim Minyan. So basically there's three tzadim, should we say, that Masra Kasav means that Chachamim define it and then it has the status of a Dimin HaTorah, or does it mean that it has a status of a Takana and a greater Bezdin would be able to undo it, or does it mean it has the status of an interpretation and a different Bezdin could interpret differently even without being greater? So it goes to the whole nature of this question also, that if they're just interpreting it and it's a Dimin HaTorah, so then the Rav Chanan's question is probably understandable that it shouldn't be a basis for any kind of a kula. It should just tell you where the din applies, but that's not a reason to be makel. But the Ketz Mishnah is perhaps assuming that really it has the status of a Din D'Rabbanan, and even though it comes from the Torah, but Chazal have the ability to set its parameters and also to give it that status, and therefore if there's a great need, even if it fell short of Pikuach Nefesh, so then that may also be in their authority to say that it's not going to apply under these circumstances. This would be consistent, the Ketz Mishnah talks about these Dinim in a few places, whether they're all consistent, something we have to figure out, but it may be consistent with the way he understands also in his comments to Hilchos Shvisa Sa'asar in Perek Aleph Halacha Hey in Hilchos Yom Kippur, that the question comes up that we find that the Mishnah in Yuma tells us there are various heterim in terms of washing, in terms of the inui of Rechitza and of Sicha. There are various heterim for a Melech and a Kala, etc. So the question is, how could that be allowed if these are Yisurim Daraisa? So what's the basis to permit them for these needs? So the Ran discusses there, and the Beis Yosef, the Ketz Mishnah, the Beis Yosef discusses over there that maybe this is an example of a Masr HaKasuv L'Chachamim, that the Torah has inuyim beyond eating and drinking on Yom Kippur, but exactly the parameters of those inuyim were left to Chazal to determine. So maybe the Ketz Mishnah L'Shitaso suggests that that's relevant there also. Maybe it's L'Shitaso that a part of making that determination also gives the right to be mekel under certain circumstances, and therefore maybe that's what's going on here as well. It could be mekel under the right circumstances in terms of the extra inuyim on Yom Kippur, and maybe that's what our Gemara is talking about also, that regarding the parameters and the chumrah of certain iterations of Chukas HaAkum, there may also be a justification for allowing a certain heterim to apply. We'll just note that the Gemara ends with the often quoted and often amazing, often reacted to line that when we're told that Anivus and Yiras Chet were eliminated also, or were lost at that time, so that when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi died, so Anivus and Yiras Chet disappeared, so Rabbi Yosef said, don't say there's no more Anivus, Deka Ana, and Rabbi Nachman said, don't say there's no more Yiras Chet, Deka Ana. So of course that sounds quite striking. How could they say that they don't have any more, that they still represent? You shouldn't say there's no more Anivus because I'm here. That sounds like it's the opposite of Anivus. It's evocative of the story they tell that when the Rav of Chaim was on his deathbed, so all the Hasidim were around him and they were davening he should get better, and they said he's such a tzaddik, he's such a Talmud Chacham, such a Baal Chesed. And then the Rebbe opened his eye and he says, "You have nothing to say about my anivus." So the joke is, it seems inconsistent for somebody to talk about his own anivus. So what does it mean here? Rav Yosef says that you shouldn't say there's no anivus, that there's still Ana, there's still me. And this leads some to even suggest that maybe he's not talking about himself, maybe there was someone else whose name was Ana, and that's what he's referring to. So there are various explanations that are suggested. There's some who note that Anivus doesn't mean that you should be denying your milas. You can still acknowledge your milas. It's just a question of seeing them in perspective or appreciating where they come from. Various suggestions along those lines. But you should also note that the Maharsha suggests that maybe this is justified because you need to correct the record. So if there was going to be a misimpression that was created, so therefore there was a need to speak up, even if it would seem like it is at odds with the Midah of Anivus. So perhaps we could say that in terms of the misconception and how this is maybe especially relevant, Bizman Hazeh, that sometimes there is the attitude that once upon a time there were people who were humble and there were people who were Yirei Shamayim, but Bizman Hazeh, it's not Shaykh anymore, that you can't expect anyone to have modesty, you can't expect anyone to have Yirei Shamayim, that that's not something that fits in this world. It's not something that has a place nowadays anymore. So to that, they had to speak up, and Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Nachman had to say, don't say that. Don't think that just because Rabbi Yudah Nasi is not around anymore, that it's impossible to have anivus, that they don't make them like they used to. There's nobody who can be humble anymore. There's no one who can be Yirei Chet. And Adarabba, it's still possible. It's still possible to have, even with all of the challenges and with all of the deficiencies that exist nowadays, it's still possible to find anivus. It's still possible to have Yiras Chet, and that we have to recognize that we're still capable of these and we can't give up on that just because it seems like the generation is not accommodating of that. It's still possible to have these attributes, and that the Masechta is ending on that note, that the same way that the Gemara started, that Haroa Sota Bechokuli Azra Atzmam and Hayayin, that when you see that the door is weak and that there are challenges, so it doesn't mean that you just give up. It means that you have to redouble your efforts and figure out how you can create greater safeguards for yourself and how you can elevate beyond that and elevate above the situation. So too, we can't give up and say that, okay, so there's no more Yerushalayim and there's no more Anivas. But Adarabba, you have to recognize that it's still possible and it's still something to aspire to, even if we're not Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and that there are those who still do it, and we don't have the right to say it's impossible, and that's how the Masechta leaves us, that we should recognize that there's still something to aspire to, and that as Hashem, we should be able to continue to uphold and to build on these midos. Mazel tov, and should go on to Hadron Olach Masechta Sota.